You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I'm Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions with my co-host Frank Santopadre and our special guest, Mishkite Wibbly.
What? Is Mishkite a name?
Mishkite Wibbly.
Is that Yiddish?
Yes.
Just go with Martha Washington. If it's all MWs. Michael Weber is back.
Thank
Ladies and gentlemen, Oscar-nominated screenwriter. And there's no shame in losing to 102-year-old James Ivory.
No. I lost to the only writer I can take in a fight.
Exactly.
So.
With all due respect, the man has a body of work.
That's true.
So
he's a legend.
It may have been a retroactive Oscar.
You know what? And it was a great movie.
Yeah,
so.
It was a great movie. Mike Weber is back. We ran out of time on the proper In Memoriam episode. We did character actors and actors and former podcast guests, and we ran out of time. We didn't want to rush through these great people and these great talents. We have some behind-the-scenes people to discuss, writers and directors.
These are my people.
These are your peeps.
Jews?
Yes. We're only going through the Jews.
Let's start with the directors and work our way down to our people, to writers. Nicholas Roeg.
Director.
Nicholas Roeg died at the ripe old age of 90. He entered the business, like Gilbert, as a tea boy, serving tea on set. He became a second unit cameraman on Lawrence of Arabia. David Lean employed him as a young man, cinematographer on Dr. Zhivago. I mean, this is a way to start a career.
But then he was fired.
Was he?
He was fired from Zhivago. Because he clashed with Lean, which is amazing.
Very good stuff.
Yeah.
I liked his work on Roger Corman's Mask of the Red Death. Do you know he shot some of those pictures?
Oh!
Those Corman...
No, I didn't know.
He shot Petulia for Richard Lester.
And he shot Petulia. Richard Lester's
now,
still
now,
around.
Now, he did that...
He's a recluse.
The Donald Sutherland...
Don't Look Now.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a seriously creepy movie.
I remember I saw that in a theater, and I complained to the management... Because I think it was the TV version they showed, because there was no nudity.
Really?
Interesting. Well,
and that the famous legend to that is allegedly Donald Sutherland and Julie Christie were actually fucking.
That's the legend for a long time. But then I think in recent years, Sutherland said no.
I think they used it to promote the film. I think it made good copy.
So an interesting thing, the American censors said to him, the director, we cannot see humping. There cannot be humping. That's the word they used.
Humping.
That's why that sex scene, there's the inner cutting.
Of them getting dressed.
That sort of going back and forth, because that was a way to pass the censors.
Yep.
And it got an R in America, and it got an X from the British censors.
Sutherland, the same cut. It's a fascinating movie to look at. And it's a terrifying movie.
It's on Criterion now.
And there's that creepy midget woman.
Played by Jerry Marin.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
It's a callback,
by Jerry
folks.
Van Dyke.
By the way, Warren Beatty was dating Julie Christie at the time of making it. And the legend you're talking about, Beatty was so upset about what he was hearing about this scene, he flew to London and demanded that the scene be cut from the movie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you found good stuff. You find research I don't even find.
Writers and directors, these are my people.
So Beatty's angry about anybody else getting pussy. Like, he's the only one.
He seems a little selfish.
He had enough to go around. Nice work, Mort Wasserman. Sutherland must have liked him because he named one of his sons after him.
Oh, wow.
Also, we should talk about Walkabout, which is a really wonderful movie.
Oh, that's with
Jenny Agutter.
Jenny Agutter, who is naked in so many movies.
Yes, American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, and she was naked in that one, too.
I also like The Men Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, it's amazing.
With our former podcast guest, Buck Henry.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And Significance. And he influenced everybody from Soderbergh to Ridley Scott to Danny Boyle to Christopher Nolan. Quite a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bertolucci. Bernardo Bertolucci died.
You go from one controversial sex scene to another.
I'm going from one controversial sex scene to another.
Now,
Our
he
last
was
tango.
In Guinea.
Yeah, that's the rumor. Yeah. How did you know?
Yes.
He aspired to be a poet. Growing up.
Right, his dad was a poet.
Yes, his dad was a poet. I've never seen The Conformist, I must admit.
I own The Conformist on DVD.
I have not seen it. Should I see it?
It is an all-time great film.
Really?
And
okay.
It holds up. It is brilliant. It is, I beg of anyone listening, go see The Conformist.
Including me.
Yes.
I have seen 1900, again with your boss.
Yeah.
A young Mr. De Niro.
The Conformist is better.
Okay, I do love
and
The Last Emperor.
And a lot shorter. Oh, yeah.
I love The Sheltering Sky. I love The Last Emperor.
So interesting about Bertolucci, he has a story credit on Once Upon a Time in the West.
Interesting.
Yeah. He helped cook up the story. He doesn't have a screenplay credit, but a story
I didn't know that. Yep. And he also gifted Hollywood with the Hollywood the gift of Vittorio Storaro, who shot Reds and
right,
Apocalypse
Now. Right, and The Conformist was their first collaboration, and it's brilliant.
Okay,
brilliant.
It's at the top of my list.
And I have to say, there was a documentary a couple of years ago, Listen to Me, Marlon. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Yeah.
About Marlon
yeah.
Brando. But the documentary was entirely constructed using private, unreleased audio tapes that Brando had kept for decades. And when you see the documentary, you realize a lot of Brando's sort of weird, meandering monologues in Last Tango were actually Brando talking about himself, his own life, his mom, his
How
family.
Bizarre.
So it's sort of, you watch this Brando doc and it kind of unlocks aspects of Last Tango that you weren't really aware of.
Yeah, not exactly a feminist.
No, I mean...
He had a Me Too. There was a Me Too moment and then some.
Yeah, I mean, controversial,
Maria Schneider
was 19.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in years later said, she said essentially she was raped. I mean, because she didn't know that the whole butter thing was... They didn't discuss that with her. It just happened.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, obviously extremely unfortunate. And
very unfortunate.
And I think it's led to a lot of conversations, obviously, in Hollywood to sort of make sure that type of thing never
happens. That movie was hard to watch at best.
Yeah.
Last Tango.
Yeah.
But now it's even more tainted.
If you see Listen to Me, Marlon,
it
kind of makes you
want
to then go back and rewatch it and like a new lens of like Brando's pain.
But on the subject of movie theaters going away, which we talked about on the full episode, he said, maybe I'm an idealist, but I still think of a movie theater as a cathedral where we all go to dream the dream together, which I thought was lovely. I will recommend, I will see The Conformist on your say-so, but I will recommend The Sheltering Sky.
And The Last Emperor won Best Picture.
Yeah.
It beat out Broadcast News and Fatal Attraction.
I love myself some Broadcast News.
Me too.
But The Last Emperor is a pretty goddamn good movie.
Yeah.
I want to mention a director that only made a few films and because he was a television writer who crossed over, and I don't know how many people know the name Hugh Wilson. Do you know who that is, Gilbert?
No.
He died. He was the creator of WKRP in Cincinnati.
And Police Academy.
And Frank's Place with Tim Reed.
Oh.
Which was a very good show. And the famous Teddy Z.
Oh.
Now there's a show that canceled too soon.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. With Alex Rocco.
And a movie, Rustler's Rhapsody.
Rhapsody.
Yeah. Which is sort of has a cult following now.
With Andy Griffith and Tom Berenger.
Yep. And John Wayne's son.
Correct. He was an MTM guy, and he became a film director. He made Guarding Tess, which is a pretty good movie with Austin Pendleton.
Yes.
He's another guy.
The First Wives Club.
We were talking about this in the other episode. He had a career in advertising.
Yes, correct.
Did not work in entertainment at all. And then at age 30, walked away from, he was, I think, running an ad agency
That's
or something,
right.
walked away from that and became Grant Tinker's gopher.
He became, right, that's right.
And then which is crazy.
He worked his way up to being an MTM guy on shows like, producing and writing shows like Newhart and Mary Tyler
Moore.
I feel
like you guys have had some guests at certain points who started off in the advertising world or sort of, I feel like a lot of people.
Bob Einstein.
Right, yes,
Yeah. So Hugh Wilson, First Wives Club, which is a fun movie too, that he made.
I think he only did the first Police Academy, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. But Bailey Quarters, to our WKRP fans, was based on his wife, the Jan Smithers character. And we should get Howard Hesseman.
Oh yes.
Yeah, we should get him to come and talk to us.
Whenever I think about
and or Tim Reed.
Whenever I think about WKRP in Cincinnati, I think how the owner of the studio in it, what was his
Les
name?
Les Nessman.
Les Nessman.
Yeah.
Was the child molester on Different Strokes.
Yep. with the fridge.
Yes.
I thought the child molester. Oh, no. You're thinking of the other guy. You're thinking of, God. What was that?
From Alf.
No.
You might be right.
It was WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yes,
it was him.
Yes.
And it
right,
was
same guy?
With Dudley.
And he was a child molester.
Yeah. He played one.
He ran the bicycle shop, which was the ideal place for a child molester.
I'm thinking of a different actor, and I'm thinking of something else. Let's talk about Milos Forman.
Yeah.
Who passed away. A great director. Great American director. Rough childhood, to say the least.
Well, he was not Jewish.
Yes.
But his father was killed by the Gestapo.
Correct.
And his mother died in Auschwitz.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. It turns out the man killed by the Gestapo was somebody he thought was his father, was not his biological father.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, his biological father actually survived.
Yeah, wow.
So that was actually
But they were killed, I guess, because they were part of the anti-Nazi
They were
underground.
Part of the underground, yeah. 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 Did you know that about him?
No.
Yeah. Very difficult childhood.
And his mother died in the camps?
Yeah.
Wow.
And when the tanks rolled into Czechoslovakia, he came to America. And he had made a couple of films in Czechoslovakia, Loves of a Blonde and The Fireman's Ball, which are part of the French Czech New Wave.
Loves of a Blonde is on Criterion. It's beautiful. Black and white.
Yes.
Really
yes. I haven't seen it in years. Yeah. I haven't seen it since film school. His first American film was Taking Off, a movie that we are going to recommend with Buck Henry.
Yes.
Who keeps turning up.
I've never seen it. I have to see it.
See that one. That one's a lot of fun. Buck Henry, by the way. Interesting. I mean, turning up with Nicholas Rogue movie and Foreman and Heaven Can Wait.
And most importantly with me and Hot to Try.
Most important. Most important.
And I remember running into Buck Henry somewhere and I said, we were in the same movie, and he looks at me disgusted, and he goes, H-T-T?
Not on the top of his resume.
Yeah, couldn't even say the title.
I guess Taking Off led to him getting Cuckoo's Nest. Michael Douglas was producing Cuckoo's Nest, and they saw something. I'm not sure if it was Taking Off or his Czech films, but they saw something in his work.
And Cuckoo's Nest was only the second film to win all five major Academy Awards. Best Picture, Actor, Actress,
That's
Director,
right.
and Screenplay.
Was it Happened One Night, the
it
first
happened
one?
One Night, yeah. And then it happened again, all five one more time in the years since.
Oh, God.
Since Cuckoo's Nest, it's happened one other time.
Now I don't even know, and I should.
Ernest Goes to Camp.
That's
yes.
it.
Yes.
That's it.
Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, I was going to say Baps.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was going to say Booty Call. Silence of the Lambs. Good. Yeah. That's good trivia.
And I read one really weird thing. He had a lot of random projects in the works that would sort of come and go over the years. Do you know where I'm going with this, Frank?
Go ahead.
So in the early 90s, he co-wrote a screenplay called Hell Camp. Do you know about Hell Camp?
No, I don't.
Okay. It's about an American-Japanese love affair in the world of sumo wrestling. And TriStar pulled the plug 4 days before they started shooting because of pressure from Japan's Sumo Wrestling Association.
That blows my mind.
Because Foreman refused to do their notes. Sumo Wrestling Association was like, we have notes. And he said no. And TriStar was like, this is too dicey. I got to pull the plug.
Well, he had a lot of interests. I want to recommend Hair, which I think is underrated.
Written by Michael Weller.
Yes.
And I get his residual checks accidentally from the guild sometimes.
Oh, he's a good playwright, Michael Weller.
And I have to send them back and say, that's not me.
Ragtime, which is another picture
I
like.
Well, and that's That's Michael Weller, yeah.
Michael Weller, yeah. I like both those pictures. Of course, Amadeus in 84, one of my favorite movies, and one of those movies I can watch over and over and over again.
Which was on Broadway. Correct. And when it was on Broadway, it was Tim Curry played Mozart, and Tim Curry was replaced by Mark Hamill.
Oh!
And Mark Hamill wanted to be in the movie, and Forman said no because audiences only associate you with Luke Skywalker.
That's a shame.
Oh.
That's a shame. And he cast Tom Hulse.
Yeah, who's amazing.
Yeah, I read an interview in doing research on Forman with F. Murray Abraham, and he's right. He said Forman had a lot of balls. He had the clout to cast anybody in those roles, and he cast Tom Hulse and F. Murray Abraham.
And it works.
And
it's
brilliant. It works brilliantly. And we'll also mention two movies written by our friends, Larry and Scott.
Oh.
Man on the Moon.
Right.
And The People versus Larry Flint.
And I have to recommend, there was a documentary that came out about a year and a half ago called Jim and Andy and the Great Beyond.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
That was a strange one.
And did you see it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
About the making of Man on the Moon and how Jim Carrey never left character.
Yeah.
And you see Milos Forman very quickly. I think it's the first day on set, and he's kind of throwing up his hands like, what the fuck is going on here? Because Jim Carrey refused to be addressed as Jim Carrey. He was Andy Kaufman on set and stayed that way to the point where Andy Kaufman's relatives visit set. And there's footage of this in the documentary.
Wild.
And he stays as Andy Kaufman in character talking to Andy's relatives, even though he's Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I got to see that.
It really, the audience for this podcast will love this documentary.
He fought for artists' rights. He was a passionate guy. He testified before Congress a couple of times. Larry wrote something very nice about him. Milos was our friend, speaking of Scott as well. Milos was our friend and teacher. We made two movies together, and every day spent with him was a unique adventure. And those are good movies. You met Larry and Scott, right? Finally?
I met them during all the sort of Oscar hullabaloo. They were so nice. There's a dinner for all the nominees in the week leading up to the awards, and Scott and Larry were both there, and they're amazing.
We're very fond of them.
And most importantly, they wrote Problem Child 1 yes. and 2.
Which Scott cried during the
yes.
I don't think he'd mind me admitting that.
But he said it did on the show. Say, because I asked him.
Revealing that.
Because I noticed, and I said, do you find a link between Problem Child and everything you've done afterwards? And there was a direct link.
If only they had written the sumo wrestling movie, it would have gotten made.
Yeah.
Three writers to mention quickly. Frank Buxton. I don't know that you'll know that name, but he wrote for The Odd Couple and Happy Days. He's got an interesting resume. Check it out. He was somebody we looked into. He was also the voice of Batfink. Does anybody remember Batfink and Karate?
Oh!
He was an interesting dude.
I do remember, actually.
Who did a lot of different kinds of things. And I love to mention people who were associated with The Odd Couple. The great Stephen Bochco. Which was a big loss. The creator of NYPD Blue and L.A. Law and Doogie Howser and Hooperman and Cop Rock. A New Yorker, really prolific writer.
I met him once at a Writers Guild thing, and he was so nice.
Oh.
And I think I just had my first writing job and was barely had anything going on, and he could not have been more friendly and warm.
That's nice to hear. What a great body of work. And I want to mention a guy named Paul DeMeo, who passed away, who wrote one of my favorite movies, The Rocketeer.
Oh, yeah. Very underrated.
Yeah.
That movie's great.
Yeah, and died, and he was not very old at all.
They've been trying for years to kind of remake The Rocketeer and sort of bring it back and give it another chance, but I that movie's great. Leave it alone.
I should also say, too,
Jennifer Connelly has great tits.
That's a trenchant insight. Thank you for that.
And I heard she's a Jew.
Yes, she is.
Oh,
and she's married to Paul Bettany.
Yes, she is.
But
yes,
most importantly,
lovely woman.
When she dies on her tombstone, they're going to say, a Jew with great tits.
If you have anything to say about it. I also want to say, and I should have said this during the first show, we're not going to cover everybody. We'll get messages on social media. How could you leave this person out? How could you leave that person out? We go as fast as we can. We get to as many people as we can. We won't get to all the writers, all the directors. We'll put them up on social media if we skip them for whatever reason.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Here's three legends. These are your people, writer boy.
Legends.
Let's start with somebody I knew personally, Harlan Ellison. I didn't know him well, but I had the good fortune of spending a couple of days in his company,
really?
Which I will never forget.
He was a Jew.
Yes, indeed, yeah. He was. Yes, indeed, he was. And he would have loved to discuss that with you. Not only was he a Jew, he was beaten up for being a Jew because he was the only Jewish boy in his neighborhood.
Wow.
In Ohio.
What was he like when you met him? Because his personality could be tricky.
His reputation preceded him. He liked me for whatever reason. I dodged the bullet. You know, I was wary of him as one should be. But we just started talking about old character actors and old lounge singers and Sinatra. He had a run-in with Sinatra, and I knew that story, and we discussed that. He just took a liking to me, which I was very grateful about.
But the legend is he has 1,700 published works between short stories, novellas, comic books, teleplays.
I cannot think of a more prolific writer.
Essays. I mean, that's 1,700. It boggles the mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to sum up Harlan.
A fascinating life. Like, I know he marched with Martin Luther King Jr.
He did indeed.
He also was, Gilbert, you'll love this, he was hired by Disney to be a writer.
Correct.
And was fired on his first day.
He was proud of that story.
when Roy Disney overheard him in the commissary talking about wanting to make an animated porno featuring the Disney characters. Day one, fired.
Yeah. Yes. NPR called him one of the most interesting humans on the earth.
I think you could still get fired for that today.
I'm sure you could. He used to bring baseball bats to meetings to make a point. He did not like executives very well. He did not suffer them.
Wrote the greatest gladly. Star Trek episode of the original series.
And never got over the fact that they messed with him.
Yeah.
Which was the
City on the
Star
Edge
Trek.
Of Forever. The Joan Collins episode.
City on the Edge of Forever.
The one where they go back to the
to
old Chicago.
Yes.
But he wrote a lot of TV. He wrote Route 66, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. He wrote The Flying Nun, and when somebody asked him why, he said, "Why do you think, idiot, I was trying to fuck Sally Field?" he wrote a column about writers' rights. He was a real advocate for artists' rights. I mean, to an extreme degree. Sued James Cameron, claiming that the Terminator story was cobbled together from parts of his stories from The Outer Limits.
Ooh.
One of them being Demon with a Glass Hand,
ooh,
which is one of the stories that he's well known for. He marched with Dr. King. He had a famous run-in with Frank Sinatra. He was an enormous fan and friend of Brother Theodore, somebody who comes up on this show.
You know, they always say to writers this whole thing of go get life experience.
He had it.
Before you write.
He had it.
And I was reading somewhere, I found a list of the odd jobs he did before he became a writer. He was a tuna fisherman, a crop picker. He was a nitroglycerin truck driver, a short order cook, a cab driver, a book salesman, a floor walker in a department store, a door-to-door brush salesman, and an actor.
Yeah. I think he told me he was a lounge singer, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which may not be on that list. I had the pleasure of having Thanksgiving at Len Wein's house, the creator of Wolverine, who we eulogized last year. I was you know, rootless in L.A. and didn't have family and had very few friends, and they took pity
on me. That's an L.A. Thanksgiving, though.
That's an L.A. Thanksgiving. Yeah. You know it well. And they invited, was that or the diner? And they invited me over for Thanksgiving, and Harlan held court. And I told a story that he said, he told me, I'm stealing that story, I'm changing the ending, and I'm claiming it as mine. And damn it if he didn't make the story better, which I'll tell. We never called him for this show, and that one I am really kicking myself for. He'd had a stroke. I didn't know what kind of condition he was in. Mm. I thought maybe I shouldn't roll the dice and press my luck since I'd had such good memories of him, and I didn't want to run afoul of him, and maybe I should have taken the chance. I still have his phone number written on my wall at home. Legendary. Read Harlan Ellison's Watching, which I'll say to our listeners, which you should read as well, which is a collection of reviews. A collection of his
I haven't read it. I have
savage reviews in some cases.
Those are the best kind.
You'll learn what Jerry Lewis syndrome is.
Oh, my
which
goodness.
Which he talks about, or read his anthologies, or the documentary Dreams with Sharp Teeth, which is great. There's so much. We could do whole episodes about Harlan Ellison and keep going. And here's another guy like that as we try to move along as fast as we can. and The Hot Rock came up on the previous show.
Yep.
And I think something else, The Great Waldo Pepper came up on the previous show, written by the peerless William Goldman.
He is my, that is my number one. He is my guy. He is...
He's the granddaddy of screenwriters.
As much responsible for any screenwriter for me wanting to do this, his work, more than anyone else. And I would say to anyone interested in film history or the business, and especially if you're interested in screenwriting, he wrote maybe the most brilliant book ever written about screenwriting and how fucked up the industry is. Adventures in the Screen Trade.
I read it every year.
Oh, I read it for the first time in college.
Oh, that's great.
And I read it every couple
Hype
of years.
Hype and Glory is great too.
Oh yeah.
And Which Lie Did I Tell?
Which Lie Did I Tell?
They're all great.
And he's really just so brilliant and so many lines that are everywhere now. Follow the Money. Nobody Knows Anything.
Sure.
They all go back to him.
Yeah.
And it's really what a career.
What a career. And wrote one of Gilbert's favorites, No Way to Treat a Lady.
Oh, yes, yes.
And, yeah.
One of the things in Adventures in the Screen Trade, he says if he could do his career all over again, he would make all the same decisions, except he would not work on All the President's Men.
I read that.
It was the
notes.
Biggest regret of his career.
Yeah.
Because making that movie was such a nightmare and was so stressful and was such a complicated process. And he goes through it in the book in a lot more detail.
Yes.
In like a giant chapter, but that it was so challenging. It really pained him in so many ways that he said if he could do it all over again, he would not write that movie. He won an Oscar for that, but would choose to not do it all over again.
It's a pretty perfect movie.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
really, you know, maybe like the greatest movie ever made about process.
My wife watches it every month to give her hope.
And wow. Isn't it still in question how much of Good Will Hunting
That is in question.
Matt Damon and Ben Affleck wrote, and how much William Goldman.
Later in life, before he died, he denied it. But it's so weird to me that those guys never wrote another great movie. It's just a very...
It's a little strange.
It is a little strange.
Gus Van Sant might have had his hands on it, too.
Yeah, yeah. You know? The other interesting thing is considering...
Screenplay, I mean.
William Goldman's career and all these movies we think about, like Marathon Man and All the President's Men and...
And Harper. Yeah.
Princess Bride, Misery.
Yeah, it's a great body of
work. His favorite movie of all time...
That he wrote?
No.
Oh.
His favorite movie of all time, Gunga Din.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Hot to Trot.
No. That was his second favorite.
So. Uh-huh. Gunga Din. Pretty good choice.
That's his favorite movie of all time.
Pretty good choice. Well, he was a novelist. Again, we talk about people who had no designs on what their actual careers became.
And an advertising guy, I think, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But a novelist and didn't really plan to be a screenwriter.
No. And The Princess Bride was a bedtime story.
Correct.
He whipped up for his two daughters, like, offhand, then turned it into a novel, then turned it into a movie.
Here's some trivia, too. He and his brother, James Goldman, who wrote Lion in Winter, and John Kander, the composer.
Oh, yeah.
From All That Jazz and Cabaret, they shared a walk-up apartment, the three of them.
Wow.
And all when they were young and struggling, and all of them went on to win Oscars.
That's amazing.
That's kind of fun.
Wow.
That's kind of fun. I also like Magic.
Oh, yeah.
The Anthony Hopkins
Very
picture.
Strange movie. Yeah.
Yes,
Burgess
yeah.
Meredith.
Yes.
Anne Margaret.
Which he wrote. We've talked about Marathon Man on this show.
Yes.
At length.
Terrific.
Which is so good.
To this day, like, I am so squeamish at the dentist. I was there last week. It's a nightmare for me. All because of that movie.
And Harper, you know, which I watched recently.
Yeah.
Which is uneven, but good. He adapted Ross McDonald. I mean, he did adaptations. He did a lot of doctor work.
We haven't mentioned Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I have to mention that.
He said... the scene of them jumping off the cliff into the water, you know, and they banter a little bit and Redford can't swim. And that, he said he owes his entire career to that scene, that everything that came later in his career would not have happened if not for that scene.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah.
Simple oil of clove, pain relief. Life could be that simple.
He's doing the dentist
scene
for
you.
Yeah. He doctored other scripts. Chaplin, A Few Good Men,
so
Dolores Claiborne, and the list goes on and on and on. And I spotted him in New York during a blackout, and I screamed like a little girl.
Huge Knicks fan. Was at a lot of Knicks games for years. He was in declining health, so it's not,
yes,
I think
why we
he was
certainly
already in decline by the time the podcast started. But I would see him at Knicks games, but be scared to go over and say something to him.
Oh,
so.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a blackout when I first moved back to New York, and I was walking around the Upper East Side with my friend Rick Willett, and people were walking in the streets with flashlights. Wow. And I don't know how I spotted William Goldman in the dark.
Wow.
But I screamed, "William Goldman!" And he jumped like someone was about to attack him. And then he told me he was going to tell his grandchildren that he was recognized in the dark. I even like Hearts in Atlantis.
Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. Boy, one of a kind. Read those books, Adventures in the Screen Trade.
Really, there'll never be another one like
Which him. Lie Did I Tell?
And I mean, he had a great...
You know the movies.
He had a great movie in four decades.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, what other screenwriter can you say that about?
That's pretty cool. And if you haven't seen, everybody's seen Misery, everybody's seen Princess Bride, but if you haven't seen Magic or Harper or No Way to Treat a Lady, they're all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a body of work. Perhaps surpassed only by the person on this last card. And
really?
And I don't know how we're going to get to this in 4 minutes, but let's try. Neil Simon passed away this year at 91.
With Neil Simon, it's so funny. Like, it seemed almost like a machine. He would write a play. The play would become a Broadway hit, and then it would be made into a movie.
Yep.
And it seemed like practically every
month. Again and again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you begin? How do you wrap your arms around this guy's career and life and body of work? I mean, a Pulitzer, four Oscar nominations, 17 Tony nominations, 50 nominations for actors in his productions.
He had almost that many marriages, too.
Yes, a lot of marriages. The only living playwright to have a theater named after him.
During one season, he had four successful plays running in New York on Broadway at the same time.
That's incredible.
No one's ever had that.
And then I think at one point late in his life, they voted him as like no longer relevant or something. Like he wasn't important to people anymore.
That's insane.
Can't be.
He would have been the perfect guest. I mean, you guys say that a lot, but he got into writing because he loved Chaplin, Buster Keaton.
I know.
Laurel and Hardy. Like, these were his guys.
It was a reluctant interview.
Yeah.
So I never went down that road. And his health was failing.
Yeah.
For years, I think, even since we started the show. I mean, you could go back to the show of shows, you know, that experience and that writer's room. He had an unhappy childhood. You saw that in the notes, and that he used to escape into the movie theaters. And he said that part of what made him a comedy writer was the pain of his childhood. And his parents were apparently always going at each other. First play, Come Blow Your Horn.
Wow.
Way back in 1961.
Phew.
And then that string of hits, Barefoot in the Park, and then The Odd Couple, and Plaza Suite, and then it just kept going. You mentioned the four plays playing simultaneously. And then there's the screenplays. You know, there's The Goodbye Girl and The Out of Towners and Murder by Death. He wrote the screenplay for After the Fox.
Oh,
which you love.
Yeah.
The Sunshine Boys, we have to mention. I mean, you can't, you know, I can't think of a more prolific writer,
I don't know
let
how
alone
he did
comedy
it.
Writer. And just, it's staggering to just sit there.
And so many of them hold up. Too.
So many of them hold
That's
up.
The other
I know Dara's a big fan of the Out of Towners.
Yeah.
He worked with a lot of our podcast guests too. Jake's Women with Alan Alda.
Yeah.
Brighton Beach with Matthew Broderick. Joyce Van Patten and Ron Lieben were in the original cast of I Ought to Be in Pictures.
Wow.
And I remember hearing a story that Neil Simon, when he was putting on The Odd Couple, he wanted Walter Matthau to play Oscar. And Walter Matthau said, "I know I can play Oscar. It's too easy. I want to act."
Mm.
And Neil Simon said, "Act in someone else's play."
I love that. That's great. The Goodbye Girl is a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
And if people who are listening to this show now haven't seen it, we did a mini episode about it. Get after that. Even stuff like Murder by Death and The Cheap Detective, I mean, they're fun. They don't entirely hold together, but there's great performances in them, and they're sweet. And it's the kind of comedy writing nobody's doing anymore.
No.
And what we love, so this show is so much about New York City, too, and New York City was a character in so much of his work. You know, I want to point that out, too.
Yeah, The Odd Couple, Sunshine Boys.
Prisoner of Second Avenue, The Out of Towners. You could go on and on. Barefoot in the Park.
I saw Prisoner of Second Avenue on Broadway with Peter Falk and Lee Grant.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah.
Did you tell Lee that when we had her on the show?
Probably not.
She probably would have gotten a kick out of that. What do we want to recommend from this list?
Wow.
Where do you begin? Where do you
want
to tell people to see? I'm going to say The Goodbye Girl for sure. And
I love The Out-of-Towners also.
Yeah, and The Sunshine Boys.
Yeah.
And if anybody can find a copy of Laughter on the 23rd Floor.
Does it exist? Because they never turned that into a movie.
I think they made a TV movie.
Oh, really?
About it. I could be wrong.
They did.
I've never seen it. I'd love to see that.
I saw it with Nathan Lane on stage, and it was a revelation. Nobody like him. Also, the comedy of Jewishness.
Yes.
Gilbert, I mean, he's of that Bruce J. Friedman.
Oh, definitely.
The school of Jewish humor, the comedy of angst, the comedy
of pain. I also read somewhere, this is so random, he had a kidney transplant in 2004. His publicist gave him a kidney.
Oh, yes.
Gilbert, would your publicist give you a kidney?
I'm going to give Gilbert one after the show's over.
Nice.
After we finish this. Bill Prady, the very accomplished comedy writer, said no American comedy writer isn't influenced by his rhythm, by the rhythm and music of his words. And I think that's true.
It's really, I remember, like, my earliest memories of watching movies are my grandparents sitting me down and showing me his work. There'll never be another.
Yeah. Sometimes when we're doing this show and I'm doing the research and I think, boy, I just want to do a marathon. I just want to lock myself in the house and watch every Neil Simon movie and read every Neil Simon play. And I want to do that with William Goldman, too.
Yeah. I bet you the two of them probably have more things on TCM than any other writer, like on a regular basis.
Yeah. A big loss this year and a lot of wonderful people lost this year. And we try to keep their names alive and we try to keep their memories alive. So, Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
For being part of this.
This is a lot of fun. It's really, you know, some special people that are gone.
We're glad
we have a place to talk about their work.
They are special people. And we'll do a music episode with our friend Ray Bone next week up. And there are some wonderful...
How's his health?
He's okay.
Yeah.
He's okay. He's taking shots. he's getting fluids. Gilly?
This has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host Frank Santopadre and our special guest, Mushy Wooshy.
There's a whole Asian thing there in that
one.
You know
what? It works.
Mushy Wooshy?
Mushy. He used to play Japanese general.
I didn't know that. With Richard Liu?
Yes.
By the way, if you ever need a pseudonym, if you ever have cause to put a pseudonym on your work, I think you've got some to choose from.
Oh, my God. I have quite a few now.
We are thrilled that you came here and joined us.
Thanks
for
having me back, guys.
Okay, pal. We'll do it again.
Definitely.
Colossal Obsessions.